comes directly, light upon light. It is incredibly powerful. A group of mystics aligned with the Absolute can change the world. Because it is through the mystic, traditionally, since the beginning of time, that the Absolute has direct access to the world. And there are the twin poles. There is the pole of love and the pole of power. The pole of love is the feminine, the pole of power is the masculine. You don't need a lot of mystics to make it happen. There have never been many lovers of God. Vaishnav said, we will never be many because who wants to get rid of the self? But it can be done, friends. It is real. It is ancient esoteric teaching that has been here since the beginning of time. Mystics have always been the elder brothers of humanity, here to help humanity. To keep the world aligned with love. To keep the currents of love that flow through life pure. And to bring with it the knowledge that is needed by humanity at each stage of evolution, when it is needed. And that is why I get so deeply upset when I see people think mystical life or spiritual life or being a Sufi is about spiritual progress. It's about getting somewhere. It is like selling yourself so cheap. Because it is about our beloved. It's about the will of our beloved, the love of our beloved. A friend of ours recently had a dream in which she dreamt that her sheikh came and said, so you want to talk about the bottom of things, let's do it. And he sat down to give us a talk. He told us that the world is turning around an axis, and this axis is Allah. And that we're trying to install a second axis of Allah through meditation and prayer. We are taking the whole world into our heart, and then we are doing it. But he said that this second axis is falling apart again. We were quite sad about it. And then the dreamer said, what can we do? And he said, this is the right question. As if this simple question was a solution to a task we were given. The whole world turns around the axis of Allah. That is what I was saying before, how every atom of creation praises God. This is the axis of Allah. That is the foundation of existence and the foundation of non-existence. And what is coming into being at this time in the evolution of humanity is the second axis, which has to do with consciousness. A conscious awareness that the axis of the world is Allah. At the moment, in the collective, there seems to be some awareness, the conscious, that the axis of the world is the dollar. It's a strange, strange state of affairs, friends. But through our own prayer and meditation, we realize this axis within ourselves, this axis of love, that is the axis of Allah, and we become conscious of it, of this core of our being that sings the praises of God, that is always in prayer. The next step is to give that to the world. Because then many, many, many things can happen in the world that otherwise can't. You know that in yourself. Once you realize this own axis of Allah within yourself, your life changes. It is never the same again. Things happen to you that otherwise would have been impossible. Why? Because you are now in tune with the will of God, not the will, not the laws of the world. Those who belong to Allah, those who belong to love, have one set of laws, the laws of love. Those who belong to the world have another set of laws. And we know this within ourselves. We know how our whole life changes. How problems can fall away. How things can happen to us. Even physical things can happen to us. It isn't just synchronicity. It's we are stepping into another reality. We're stepping into the reality of Allah in this world, which is always normally hidden and veiled. But once you live the reality of Allah in this world, it becomes real. What was insubstantial becomes real, and life becomes real to you. And that is, we know that in our individual journey. We don't realize that the same can happen to the whole world. If we can bring this axis of prayer, this axis of meditation, this axis of a conscious recognition, a conscious witnessing of our Lord. This was our covenant. And he called the not yet created humanity and said, "Am I not your Lord?" And we said, "Yes, we witness it." That is why for Sufism remembrance is so primal, so essential. We remember. We practice this remembrance until we can no longer ever forget. Until our heart is awake. Until our heart always sings the name of God. Whether we are awake, whether we are asleep. And the angels hear it, and then the angels work with us because they are in obedience to the name of God. We didn't know that. When a heart wakes up and sings the name of God, the angels hear it. They hear it because they love it, because it is the name of their master. And to have the name of their master heard, sung within the heart of a human being is so precious. Then they come to the human being and they look after that human being for the rest of that person's life. Because that person has given his or her heart to God. And God has become alive within the heart of that human being. And the whole of the universe responds. And not just the visible universe, the invisible universe. You become a center of light, both on the outer world and in the inner world. Something within the human being lights up. They are very beautiful to see them. And when a human being is awake with the name of God, when the remembrance has become alive, then God can work with that human being. And God can bring his presence, his oneness, his grace directly into life. And then life has to obey directly because there are laws written for the will of God. They are imprinted into every cell of creation. Everything in creation has to enact the will of God. It is not action-reaction. It is not relative. It has to respond. It is so powerful, the will of God. It is absolute. As I say, what we think of as power, even what we think of as spiritual power, is so insignificant. The will of God is absolute. If it is his will, he can change the world. But he has given humanity free will. But if there are human beings, if there are Sufis, if there are lovers of God, mystics, whatever religion, because really, mystics have belonged to God. There is no form. They belong to God. If enough, it doesn't have to be many, offer up their own free will, then his will can come directly into life. Not filtered, not gradual, because there is a need for this present moment. then life will respond. Only he can change his world. We are hopeless at it. But our beloved, and the great ones who are his agents, his vice-regents, who hold in their hearts the plans for humanity, the plans for the world, who have been looking after the world for hundreds of years. They can make something happen. I have seen it. I know what it can be. And not only have I seen it, other people I know have seen it. What life can be in a few years. How it can change. How all the present power structures of the world can just be flipped onto a higher vibration. So a different thought form spins around in them. Through the will of our beloved, and through us, friends, saying, yes, beloved, use me, as only you know how to use me. I am here in service to you. The real service of giving one's heart, one's being, one's blood, one's every breath to one's beloved. Then one becomes a real human being. No longer just an image of a human being. No longer just the facade of a human being. Not even a spiritual human being, but a real human being. Then we will no longer carry the shame of an abused planet. The shame of a patriarchal culture. The shame of so much waste, so much ruin, so much greed. Because we will know it is all about something else. Something so simple, so eternal, so wonderful. So real. Then, if we are fortunate, if we are allowed to, we will hear the heart of the world beginning to sing. We will hear the heart of the world awakening. And when the heart of the world sings, friends, it has been written that it will happen. But our beloved needs us to help him, to awaken the world to life. So if somebody has something they want to ask, we have another half an hour. Somebody has a microphone. There's a question over here. Is there a microphone, Ben? You haven't got a microphone. Yes, Emmanuel's got the microphone. Right at the front. One, two. Yeah, please, now is the time to sneak out. Yeah. Sorry, can't hear anything. Is it on? Now it is?
The light on. Is it on now?
No.
How about
on?
That you've been talking about the changes that are coming, we hope, in the hierarchical structures. And I've been wondering how you feel that will be reflected in our spiritual organizations, which by nature are pretty hierarchical.
By nature, they are hierarchical. To me, that is an oxymoron. Nature is not hierarchical.
Thank you.
Nature is an organic web in which the need is responded to within the organic wholeness. And to me, hierarchies are something of the past. They are a dinosaur.
So something is going to change in probably a lot of Sufi spiritual orders.
I didn't know there were Sufi spiritual hierarchies.
Oh, well, I experienced them.
Because we belong to God. We are part of His one.
Ah.
Yeah, somebody else. You had a question at the back. There is no hierarchy here. We are just all together for His sake, are we? My sheikh, he said, somebody was asking him about spiritual progress, and he said, swimming in the infinite shore, in the infinite sea, who is nearer the shore and which shore? We just try to be more immersed in the oneness of God. And oneness and hierarchy, I don't think they quite go together. We are here just for His sake. Nobody is higher, nobody is lower. Our hearts belong to God, yes.
In working with this world of relative truth and in understanding that the path we're on is just an image of the path we have right now, that will change later on. Well, how do we reconcile needing an image of the path right now and knowing that it's not true and it will change later?
As long as you recognize that it is relative, then you can use it. The danger is when you say, this is how it ought to be. Because it's how it is at the moment for you. I shared this dream I had the other day. When I shared the other day this dream I had about seeing this coffin and myself written as a spiritual aspirant was on the coffin. And, you know, before then I'd said, Mrs. Tweedy, I still have this image of myself as a spiritual seeker, as an aspirant. And she said, yes, my dear, it's a necessary crutch. So as long as everything is good as long as you recognize what it is. And an image of the path, we all need an image of the path. The Sufi says, first you create an image of God, then He creates you. It's fine, you create an image of your beloved. Later you realize He has no image. He has no form, He has no substance. Yeah? It is to acknowledge that it is relative and use it as relative. The danger is always it is like when you try and make a relationship a perfect relationship. Then disaster, as long as you acknowledge that it is relative. A human relationship, that is. Relationship with God is much easier because it doesn't have to be relative. Yeah? Somebody else. Over here. I'm getting a microphone in a moment. The lady at the window.
What about mysticism without Sufism?
Talking to the microphone.
What about mysticism without Sufism?
Sufism is a name. Sufis never used to call themselves Sufis. They were just known as lovers of God. Mystics are mystics. It has to do with going beyond the forms into the formless. Yeah? Sufism is just a word. Very nice word. It means, it has to do with wool and softness. One of my favorite definitions of Sufi, you are a Sufi when your heart is as soft and as warm as wool. But traditionally, Sufis was a name that other people called those who didn't have a name. Yeah? You had a question?
Yeah.
Just a moment to get a microphone, because I'm sure you have a good voice. Here at the front, Ben, the lady in the second row.
You spoke the other day about the dangers of the spiritual ego.
Yeah, dangers of spiritual ego.
I'd like you to, can you go into that a little more and tell us, is it the same as spiritual pride or no?
Spiritual pride is easier to recognize. The danger is that you think you are a spiritual person. You think you have a spiritual purpose in life. And then you'd create, instead of an ego, you create a spiritual ego. And you have spiritual desires, and you have spiritual ambitions, and you want to get somewhere spiritually, and I mean, it's okay as long as you know that's what it is. You know, I always admire Zen because they say at the beginning, you're not going to realize anything, you're not going to get anywhere, right? Of course, nobody really believes it, because otherwise why would they sit for 10 years in that really uncomfortable meditation practice? But at least they hold in the back of their consciousness the fact they're not going to realize anything, you know, so after 20 years they accept it. The real danger actually is what's not understood very much, is you can, on the inner planes, create a whole illusory world, and you can have what seem to be spiritual experiences, what seem to be states of bliss, and you don't, unless you have a teacher, this is one of the reasons traditionally you need to have a teacher to tell you that is an illusion. I've seen people create spiritual dreams, and they always have a little bit, they're a little bit too perfect. They have something missing. The serpent isn't there in the Garden of Eden. And you can actually, this isn't generally answered, you can actually create a whole artificial spiritual world on the inner planes. It's quite beautiful. It's full of often very angelic images. You can actually populate it with your own spiritual fantasies. And, you know, whatever you think of is particularly spiritual. And you get a certain glaze around you. People who do this, they have a certain, you know, sometimes they smile in a certain way, and you can actually see there's a certain glaze around them. They're not actually just real ordinary people. And, you know, in the end, we just have to be real ordinary people, because that's how our beloved made us.
For a person like me who's quite concrete, the question to each individual will be, what to do?
What to do? Yeah, this is what, this is the, you know, this dream I said about the making the second axis, a dreamer said, what can we do? I asked this to a friend of mine in England, who's a wise old woman, and she wrote back and she said, yes, what can we do? Somehow the answer seems to be nothing and yet everything. The doing capacity has been instilled into us through parents and education, and we have to translate it into being instead. Sufism is traditionally a state of being. We've become a bit fanatical about doing. And just be yourself. Love God, be yourself. Do a few practices if you like. But it really has to do with a state of surrender, a state of saying, beloved, use me. And it becomes a state, if you try and do it too much. Our teacher said if it's too much effort, it's not spiritual. And it has to do with being oneself for his sake. The only difference between, if you like, worldly people and spiritual people, I don't like to use the word spiritual people, but is that we live our life for his sake. They live their lives for their sake. That's all. And, you know, don't try too hard. Yeah? Anybody else like to ask anything? Yes? In the back. The guy in the shirt. Yes.
My understanding that Sufi path is only learned at the feet of the masters. Is this a new way of doing things? Are you just sowing a seed among us so that we can then go on to learn more?
I mean, Sufism has traditionally been learnt at the feet of the masters. In early days of Sufism, there were no Sufi orders. There were just Sufi masters who gathered disciples around them. That is, it's always been a teacher-disciple relationship. Because the secrets of the heart can only be passed from heart to heart. And it's nothing new. We are just here, all we are doing here is just bringing together for a short time in a physical space different Sufi orders so that. And it's working, you know, it's working. Something's there. It's
inshallah.
Working. Yeah, that's all. But it's always been teacher-disciple relationship. You can't read Sufism in books. You know, I've written a lot of books, I should know. Somebody behind, just behind. Ben, behind. Yeah.
Yes, I'm having trouble understanding if we have, as human beings, we have free will. If there is chaos and change as part of the divine order of things, well then, I mean, how do we reconcile this with the absolute determinism of, you said it is written, you know.
I said certain things are written. I didn't say it is written. Listen, no, this is an important distinction, please. Only certain things are written. Most things are not written. Most things are up to us. And it is very interesting to see what is written and what is not written. And that is why traditionally a lot of Sufi work is to keep an empty page so that he can write what he wants in your life. Most people fill up the page with scribbles fairly quickly. But no, a lot of things are not written.
Good.
Certain things are written.
Great. And so
if it is written, it has to happen. There is no absolute determinism.
Okay. Thank you.
And maybe there is. I don't know about it. In my experience, there isn't. It's like it is said, for example, with a human being that on the spiritual path, it is never known until the very last initiation which way they will go. You just don't know because it's free will. That's why one has to have a sense of humor to be a Sufi. Otherwise, because there is so much love, you know. We are loved so much. If you knew how much we are loved. And when we make a mess of it, we are loved just the same as when we do the right thing. We don't know it. Humanity is loved unbelievably, completely, totally, without reservation. And there is enormous amount of care that goes to helping humanity. Unbelievable care. And we are left free. Yeah, the real human freedom is whether we say, yes, beloved, I witness you. Or whether we just go about our daily business. That is the real freedom, to say yes to God. And then to live that yes. With passion, with commitment, with desire, with despair, with frustration, with anger, with resentment, with everything inside of ourselves. Not to exclude anything from our love for God. The moment you exclude something, you deny His oneness. You deny that which is real. So friends, God bless. It's been wonderful being together. We are continuing these Sufi conferences next year. Yeah, next year is in California, because people in California were, you know, it's such a sort of poor, hungry life in California. They are so deprived, you know. They can only eat organic food and. So it's in November at Asilomar. We were there a year and a half ago. Beautiful place on the shores of the Pacific Ocean. Weather should be nice in November if you like nice weather. And it's just south of San Francisco. Do I think I will ever be here again? Yes. It is not written, but it's a good probability. So, anything else? Anything else, Cleary, I need to say? Anything else anybody like me to say?
Inshallah.
Inshallah. There you go, inshallah. It's the will of God. It's the will of our beloved. Oh, uniting inner and outer. Yeah? Is that good enough? There's a little bit of paper at the back. If the eye of the heart is open, in each atom there will be 100 secrets. That's attar. Attar. So God bless you all for coming, because it's only through everybody being together for his sake that this conference happens both outwardly and inwardly. And that is what matters. What matters is being together. There is something very special when lovers of God come together on the physical plane. Something is given, something is allowed to be given, something can happen. And if you take nothing home, you are really blessed. If you take something home, enjoy it.
What you take about is a gift to yourself.
Your gift to yourself. That sounds complicated. So friends, safe journeys.